Hey everybody, this is Karen Allen from Trinity Health Hub. Eugenie has asked me to share one of our webinars for you to enjoy during this holiday season. Our hub specializes in continuing education and community connection all around the globe. If you'd like to find out more about what we do or the content that you can stream on demand, visit our website, trinityhealthhub.com. We look forward to seeing you online. So we are back with Doug Brown with another session of Homeopathy, Physics, and Consciousness. And Doug is building on what we've been doing with the earlier sessions, and he's going to be talking with us today about the poesia, right? The grains?
That's right. Thank you, Karen. Well, thank you for once again for inviting me to do this series. It's been a great pleasure for me and a great stimulus to my own thinking and explorations. And one of the things I've been thinking about these last few months leading up to the Glasgow conference, and I'm sure many of you have too, is that we really are perhaps living through the twilight of the Holocene era. You know, the Holocene era refers to our current climate conditions, which has seen relative stability for the last 10,000 years since the last ice age. And whether we realize it or not, we've become very dependent upon that climate stability. It has allowed the flourishing of our human civilization. And now we are at this apparent transition from a Holocene era to what is being called the Anthropocene era, right? The Anthropocene era being the era in which humans control, determine what the condition of the planet will be, right? So we are in an age where human consciousness is driving the trajectory of the biosphere, right? Which is really a phenomenal change when you think about it. If you think of the 4+ billion year history of planet Earth, where human consciousness, you know, was nothing for 99.9999 whatever infinite number of 9% of that time, right? And now in just a flash, it is human consciousness that is going to determine what happens in our biosphere. Mm-hmm. And so to survive as a species, we need to understand ourselves, right? We need to understand our own consciousness. And I ask myself, what insights into our collective consciousness can we gain from our individual patients? Mm-hmm. So today what I want to do is share some insights into the Poaceae, as Karen said, the family of remedies made from the grains and cereals that are the basis of our agricultural civilization, right? To see if we can gain some insights into how we as a species think, given that we are an agriculturally based, at this point, civilization. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with this case of an 83-year-old man. I'm going to share my screen, pull this up. So this is an 83-year-old man who is actually, he was at home, but he was in hospice care. He was dying from multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm. Doug, can you move this up? We're seeing half of your Catalina Mountain. And then, there you go. That's much better.
Is that better?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. And he's very weak. He spends most of his days in bed. He's incontinent. He has some dementia. Other problems he's had in the past, continuing problems, but aren't so important right now when I first see him, are atrial fibrillation and type 2 diabetes. Of course, serious problems in their own right, but when you're dying of multiple myeloma, they went into the background. So his wife asked me to treat him. And he's able to speak to me. He says, "I'm very tired. I just need to sleep for a week. Besides being tired, not that bad. I'm just overly tired. And then R is his wife's name, and B is the patient. R says, well, for about a year, this morning he was feeling really good. He was in a good mood. And then the patient says, I have a good appetite. There's a lot I can't remember. I ask him about his earliest memories. And he said, well, I was growing up in Oklahoma City. It was terrible. We were so poor, and he laughs. I had to catch pigeons to eat. It was a terrible time. I had loving parents. We had no money. There was no welfare. I said, tell me more about that experience. He says, you don't want to know. It was awful. You never knew when you'd get to eat again. It made me afraid I wasn't going to get to eat. I said, what was the effect on you? He said, it makes you feel like you just want to eat, but there's no food. It's terrible. When you have the desire to eat and there's no food, it's sad when you're a little boy. That was my growing up. We used to sleep in a Greyhound bus terminal. You don't understand why there's no food for you. It's a hopeless feeling. When you need to eat and there's no food, no chance. You try to put off the eating as long as you can. You got to have something to eat. My mom would go to restaurants and ask if we could wash dishes. It was embarrassing to beg for food. Yes, I was begging, not because I wanted to, but because I had to. We were always looking to get something to eat. That was the main motivator. You got to eat. I loved pecans. It was a real good source of food. I used to bring home a sack. I used to sell newspapers on the ship. They'd take care of me like a little kid. They fed me. That was my happiness time when they let us go through the chow line. That was so good. I'm just wondering, why are there ships in Oklahoma City? Maybe he moved at this point.
Like a riverboat, maybe?
Maybe so. I'm just wondering. Anyway, first time that question occurred to me. Anyway, I live with my sister. She was 15 years older. She taught me how to read. I loved living with her. We did everything together. I helped her and she helped me. We lived in the desert. We lived in a train car. We were happy. I said, why were you happy? We got to eat. She was a good cook. I didn't want to be poor. I worked extra hard so as not to have to beg. I worked hard my whole life. I always worked at the railway station. In high school, we learned how to work on cars. Then I could buy food. I used to buy a dozen hamburgers. I was so hungry. I asked about her mother, his mother. She was sweet. She spoiled me. I was a good kid to spoil. I asked about his father. He was a wonderful man. I loved my dad. He did everything for me. He read to me all the time. I asked about his earlier marriages. We had a sex problem. They didn't want sex, and I did. My first wife was a backstabber. Take everything you had, leave you with a glass of Coke. It was awful. And I had two daughters. He says, I hate women. Somebody comes in and takes everything you had. That's terrible. I ask about fears. He said he has a fear of hobos breaking in. I ask about his heart. He said, well, I have an irregular beat. Sometimes it speeds up. It's scary. My heart beating real fast. You start to sweat. Your palms get wet. You don't know what's going to happen. You're very afraid. I ask about his diabetes, and his wife interjects and says he won't admit that he has it. I ask about his thyroid, and his wife says he doesn't know why he's taking that pill. I ask about his multiple myeloma. He says, I'm afraid of it. I don't want to know. Let that move over to the side. I hope I can live through it. I don't want to be a burden. I'm already a burden. And his wife says very kindly, that's your middle name. She, of course, has her own story, which we can talk about some other time. Interesting case. Anyway, I ask about his favorite foods. He gets very excited. He says, all kinds. I'm an addict when it comes to food. His wife interjects, not lately. He's down to 141 pounds this morning. And then he says, my favorites are fresh fruit, macaroni, tomato juice, pizza, and spaghetti. And I ask what he hates. He says, I like liver and onions. Most people hate. In other words, there's no food he hates. Mm-hmm. And his wife says he's very stubborn. He had a stroke in his short-term memory at the end of 2018, and he has chemo brain, she calls it, from the chemotherapy he was receiving from his multiple myeloma. She says he pees a lot and that he used to be very modest, but now he walks around in his underwear. He's not interested in anything. He's less and less involved. He walks around with his pants around his thighs. He pooped. He didn't clean himself. It's all over the bed. He's not aware of his situation. He was like that for 3 days, his wife says. He has a history of head injuries with choking and passing out. He's lost a lot of vision. Is it from his diabetes? Is it a cataract? She says, we've been together for 45 years since I was 30. So that's the case. And as you can see, there's one overriding theme, which is what?
Eating.
Eating.
And food. His whole life is all around food. And even his fear of hobos breaking in. What do hobos want? They want food.
Right, right.
You know, hobos used to come to people's back doors to get donations of food.
That's right. That's right. So these are not difficult cases, actually, Poaceae. We just have to be aware that the major theme of the Poaceae is all about food and hunger and eating. And then it's just a matter of differentiating. And we'll talk a little bit about the differentiation in a bit. I gave him Oryza sativa, which is rice, which is a very basic remedy. We'll talk a little bit about it in a bit, but first let's just go through the follow-ups. I didn't have it. I had him take it noetically to start with, 30C twice a day. I didn't put the date of this first follow-up. He says, basically nothing changed. I actually feel pretty good. No pain anywhere. My biggest problem might be my memory. So he's acknowledging the memory problem. I'm not required to remember much, so I'm off the hook. I don't need anything. I'm feeling good. His wife said he had a catheter and was incontinent. Now he can sleep through all the peeing. He fills the bag up 4 times a day. She says he's eating like a pig, 5 meals a day. Remember, he had been losing weight. Now he's eating again. She says, in my opinion, he's doing a lot better. He's eating, pooping, peeing, sleeping. He's fun to be with. He's crazy about Diet Coke. Interesting. Coke came up in the initial evaluation. Remember what he said about Coke?
He said his ex-wife left him with just a glass of Coke, right?
Exactly. It's so curious because he has kind of an obsession about Diet Coke. But in the first case, he kind of made it sound like it was something, the last thing he would want, but he actually wants to drink it all the time. He's obsessed about it. He says, I'm 83 years old. I want to drink what I want to drink. I ask what his favorite parts of the day are. He says, eating breakfast, eating lunch, eating dinner, and eating snacks.
Wow.
He's nothing if not predictable, right? I try to make everything funny, haha, he says. And his wife says he walked 2 city blocks yesterday.
Wow.
He says, everything depends on how much energy you have. Everything depends on how much energy you have. So these cereals, these grains, they're a great provider of calories, right? Of energy. We even turn corn into gasoline, right? To power our vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this connection in a way with the carbons. I'd like to be able to eat without having to worry about what I'm going to eat or when I'm going to eat, he says. And it, with me during this session, he's a little irritable because he's eager to go out to eat. So I just say, continue, let's continue. This time he has the pellets. He's taking 30C twice a day. September 2016, his wife says Bill is doing much better. He's off of hospice, the hospice care. They said he didn't need them. He's off of the catheter. He's now sleeping upstairs. He can go up the stairs. He seems more interested in what's going on in his life. It's more cooperative. He's not wetting his pants during the day, but still at night, we're almost out of that medication. She's writing. And during the Zoom call the next day, he says, I feel great. I feel good all over. I get up, eat breakfast, go sit in my chair most of my day, unless we go somewhere. If so, great. I don't have a lot to do. I'm pretty boring. I ask him, are you bored? No, I'm fine. What do you do in the chair? I read and I rest. And then he goes on to tell me, you know, you get a 15% discount at Denny's. I said, well, what's your favorite dish? He says, I like their breakfast grand slam. And he goes on to tell me about the discount that you can get. So I thank him for that information. And I said, anything you would like to change in your life, if you could, what would you like to change? He says, I would play more golf. I don't have people to play with. My daughter is the only one I can play with. His wife says, you know, it's been 6 months since you've played golf. And he would not have the energy. He just walks to the corner and he's exhausted. And he says, she's trying to make it out like I'm some sort of cripple. I'm not. And she says, he's doing a lot more with me, getting the salt and pepper. It's an incredible improvement in the last 2 weeks, physically and mentally. Sometimes I get tired of waiting on him. He made both of us a bowl of ice cream. That was the first time he thought of doing something for me. He washed his face for the first time. Still peeing at night, still dropping his rubber pants on the floor, but he's remembering more than he used to. He's going to the bathroom. He's not going to the bathroom as much. He's going every 30 minutes. He's got his weight back. And he's eating well. She says his breath is really bad. He may still have cancer of the bone. They have blood work scheduled on Monday. I'm not going to put him on chemo. I ask about his appetite. Really good. He's always wanting something to eat. She's doing a good job of making different things. I don't like eating the same thing all the time. I like going out. I can get what I want, but she doesn't like to go out to eat. I asked about his heart, the palpitations. He said, it's been so good, I haven't even thought about it. And November 12th, 2020, feeling pretty good right now. Wife says the pee issue is way better. Before, the pants were drenched. Now every other day, they're completely dry. Other days, a little wet. He's going to bed less thirsty. He's not constantly drinking. Maybe his diabetes is better. His breath is so bad, it would knock you over. Rotten, foul, outhouse poop breath. We can see some kind of externalization here, right, through the breath. Mm-hmm. Disease coming out that way. I increase the remedy potency to 200 C once a week and also have him take Zaclac on the other days. And on New Year's Eve of 2020, he says it's been a wonderful year. We get to go to a lot of wonderful places. She's being mean, his wife. We got to go to places and see people. She doesn't agree with me. I feel good. My body feels good. Like I want to go out and do something. Like I want to go out and play golf. I'm ready to do something. I'm tired of sitting around the house. I'm ready. Let's go. The energy level is good. I feel really good. I don't have any pain. I don't feel like I've been sick. I feel good. Sleeping good. Appetite good. He says, I'm eating everything I want to eat. There are no problems with what I eat. I'm not a big eater. I'm not a picky eater. I do eat my share. I asked him about his favorite moment of the last few days. He says, sitting in the other room, looking at the Christmas tree, it makes me feel happy. You can see there's a very childlike aspect to him. Right? Very, very childlike. His wife says he's hugging me more. Before, he would bat me away a lot of time. Now he lets me hug him. I think some people are born to be caretakers, she says of herself. I'm not. And her husband says, I think she's doing a good job. And then she complains, he never finishes what I give him. He's hungry, but he doesn't eat as much. He's thin. He lost 5 pounds. Plan was just the same. Didn't change anything. February 19th. He says, he's great, not doing much. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to do. I'm not bothered by it. I'm the kind of guy that goes with the flow. Oh, and then she says, the wife says, he's doing 1,000 times, I think, better, is what she meant. He's taking care of me, helping me, much more aware. But he says, these days, not much flow. So you can see there's kind of an incongruence sometimes between his report, his self-report, and what his wife reports. Which isn't that uncommon, right? We can see that in our cases, especially when the spouse or partner of the patient themselves needs a remedy to change their perception, to help with their perception, really. We see this incongruence. These days, not much flow, he says. Everything stopped. Everybody is just vegging out. They don't know what to do. Everything is slowed way down. I'm not bothered at all. Not something that irritates the hell out of me. It speeds up. I'm going with it. I want to go out to eat. And his wife says he loves Diet Coke. He doesn't remember what he was going for. That part of his brain still isn't working. He can't remember certain things. I asked her to rate his overall functioning, and she puts it at about 40%. And he pipes in, "I'd like to go out to eat." And he's laughing. So at this point, I didn't change anything.
At this point, Doug, is she still mentioning the incredible odor from his?
Oh, good question. I didn't note that this visit. So that's a good question. I don't know.
That would be a pretty good indicator of what's going on in that terrain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so say more, Karen, if he was still having the odor, what would that indicate to you? What would that indicate?
Yeah, I don't know. I might be thinking more about, you know, the frequency of dosing. If it was gone, that would be such an emphasis that says this remedy is reaching right into that myeloma terrain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't ask.
And she didn't bring it up.
She did bring it up. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. In April, he says, "Better, but no energy, walking better, brain a tiny bit better. I'm noticing things more." And yesterday, I don't know if this is her speaking or him speaking. Yesterday, made the spaghetti on his own. He only weighs 151. Previous weight was 157. So it's actually it's climbing back up gradually. Mm-hmm. His appetite is good. Burning it up, but not doing anything, not getting any exercise, has absolutely no ambition or interest. Patient says, "Actually, I feel pretty good. I don't hurt anywhere. I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit down and watch. I don't mind watching everybody else. How's your mood?" "Fine, I'm happy." And his wife says, "We had sex once." He says, "It's been better. I wish I was better. I don't hurt anymore. Yeah, I feel good, but I don't feel I have the will to do everything like I used to. I want to do things. Ask about food and eating. I don't like everything." Which is a change, right? Mm-hmm. "Pretty much eating what I want, not too much of an appetite. I'm not enthusiastic about anything. I've lost my spirit, I think. I wake up all the time." I don't think he is waking up all the time. "Dreams. I remember going out to eat yesterday." And his wife said, "We didn't." And he says, "I wanted to." At this point, I increase his potency to 10 m. I think actually, I may have not noted this in this copy, but I think there was an intervening time where I had him on 1 m. I'm not sure. But anyway, at this point, I increase it to 10 m from 200. And then on October 19th, they get a report that says that the blood work says his cancer is completely gone. The multiple myeloma is no longer present, is no longer evident. He's still able to eat, enjoy eating. He's now playing golf. I think it's with his daughter. I think that's a misprint there. Golf is my passion, he said. He's actually playing golf. This to me really was a jaw dropper.
It's amazing. You know, when you first take this case, he's near death in hospice.
Right.
And that was in September of the previous year.
Right.
The fact that he would even be on the planet through the rest of the year is kind of remarkable, but that a year goes by with no evidence of cancer after a year and he's out playing golf.
Yeah. Yeah. That really was a jaw dropper for me. That made me very happy to hear that he was playing golf. It really was lovely. Yeah. He's gone 3 times so far. He says, "We've been having fun." Then he says, "Eating I love." So his spirit is back, right? Especially when I get something I like. Favorite, still Diet Coke. And then he makes a point of telling me about his favorite dish at Jack in the Box, something called Tiny Tacos. Because they taste good. They're small, but man, they're really good. I'm hooked on them. Not as much as Diet Coke. And then he says, the test is with her. If she don't think I'm doing well, I'm in trouble. She says, he's not incontinent anymore. He hasn't peed on himself at all since the last time we spoke. They put him on Flomax. Everything is better. Dreams, none. No trouble sleeping. She says she read Harry Potter to him and he remembers better. I feel like, okay, we really can say this is a cured case at this point.
Yeah.
And I just have him maintain on that 10 a.m. every 2 weeks with Sackleck. So that's the case. Any before we go on, any comments or thoughts about the case?
Yeah, for those of you who are here with us, you know, I love the rhythm of this case and the way that we've just hung in seeing the action of the remedy as it goes deeper and deeper. Do you guys have questions or comments? Anything you want to share or ask Doug about this?
And we'll go through a bit of the differential of the Poaceae and why Oryza sativa as opposed to another.
Yeah, there's just big wow in the comments, Doug. Yeah. It's a beautiful case.
Yeah, thank you. It was really a pleasure to see him, especially when he told me he was playing golf. That really that really made my day. So yeah, so as you can see, the Poaceae, it's all about food. And since food is connected with one, survival, and two, love, I want to point out that these cases can be confused with a row two or row three mineral. But when we go beyond the physical symptoms to the mental state and see how there's just this preoccupation with food and with eating, right, we'll quickly know to consider the Poaceae. And here are some ancillary themes of the Poaceae that may help in bringing the family to our mind. And this is mostly from Yakir. Issues of rootedness, ancestral roots. You know, when you think of the farm being passed down from generation through generation, this has to do with the transition of humanity from being on the move, nomadic, hunting, gathering, to being sedentist or settled agriculture, right? So this is part of the themes, being settled or not, moving around or not, right? Interesting, in his case, he started out in Oklahoma City, but then he was on a ship and then he was in the desert. So, you know, maybe there was this absence of settled. In his case, it would be interesting now to ask him about that as I think about it and how that affected him. Childishness or childlikeness, right? So patients will come across as quite a bit younger than their actual chronological age. Excessive absorption in the family as part of this childlike aspect. You know, the horizons, you can tell his horizons are quite limited, right? What is he focused on? He's focused on eating and then the family around that and not much else. And nutritional issues, what his weight is, malabsorption, malnutrition, digestive tract pathology. Yakir points out there can be burning or stabbing or stinging sensations, and that also kind of like a grain of wheat or a grain or a stand of corn, there's this issue of being standing straight or erect and being self-supporting or versus being bent forward, which is an experience of instability. Interesting observation by Yakir. So Oryza sativa corresponds to very early childhood. And they can present with brain damage as he did. He had, quote, chemo brain. He also had a history of head injury and his wife said he has dementia, which was somewhat evident, although he was able to have actually a conversation with me. It was clearly a limited cognitive function or a limited ability to abstract or self-reflect. Mm-hmm. And with this remedy, there can be a kind of autistic or obsessive state. And this was manifested in his obsession with Diet Coke. So let's just go through some of the more common Poaceae remedies. So saccharum album, right? Sugar. It's like Oryza sativa, it corresponds to very early childhood. And here, this is expressed most prominently in the forsaken feeling, constantly demanding, often violently, proof that they are loved. There's also a fear of failure, anger, and like many of these remedies, many digestive complaints. Zea italica, or stigmata matus is another name for it. Consider this when the patient has urinary tract pathologies. And these patients make big efforts at self-control, repressing anger and attempting attempting to be what? I think conciliatory and placating. Mm-hmm. Arundo corresponds to childhood and adolescence, known for its allergic symptoms, itching in the upper palate and burning nasal discharge. And the mental symptoms include dullness of intellect, immature sexuality, and foolish behavior. Wheat, Triticum vulgare, is the most adolescent member of the group, and they wish to comply with the family's wishes. They feel obliged, but they also have an aversion to household duties. Think of adolescence, that stage. Bambusa, so this is a member of the Poaceae, but it's not, it's, this isn't something we eat, right? We don't eat bamboo, of course, but it's part of the family. And I wanted to relate a dream of one of my patients, very interesting dream, who was doing very well on this remedy. He actually did well on it for over a year until recently. And I think unfortunately the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, made his case more complicated. So I haven't figured out what to do next. But anyway, for over a year, he did great on Bambusa. And I want to share one of the dreams he had while on this, while he was doing well on it. He said, "My partner and I bought a place where we could grow our own food. We were going to have to build a fence. I was worried about kids not looking, walking off a cliff. We had green beans and the grass was beautiful and green. The corn was tall." Remember, the Poaceae are also the grasses. Mm-hmm. We used to call this family the Graminaceae, which means grasses. I told my partner, "See that farm? See their corn, the dairy, the chickens? They are really nice people. They're first generation Swedish. Let's go down and visit them." We drove down there. It was a young couple. They had dairy. They had made cheese. They had all these wonderful things. The older couple said, "Let's get acquainted." I said, "We have a cat in the car." "Don't worry. Put the cat in the chicken coop." Cat lay down with the chickens. All felt good and comfortable. They had a dairy and they made cheese. They had corn roasting the ears. And my partner said, "I love green beans." And the girl gave my partner a bushel of green beans. I asked him, "What is the most striking thing? What was the most striking thing in the dream?" And he said, "All this stuff growing, everything so lush and beautiful, everything growing so well, things we like, our own fresh veggies and fruit, plus neighbors who make this wonderful stuff too. I don't know why we had our place on a cliff. Did I buy it for a view, for the farmland? Because that was what I could get." So interesting, even though bamboo is not a food, of course, in this dream, it was all about food and maybe the fence. Was mm-hmm. you know, the function of bamboo is to fence things in, right? Fence off one's land from another land, another part of land. And of course, in indigenous cultures, there's no concept of land ownership, right? You belong to the land doesn't belong to you. Mm-hmm. But with bamboo, we have perhaps an aspect of this land is my land, right? And look how beautiful it is and what we can grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or look at what they have. And we don't have, but they have all of this great land where they can grow all of these amazing fruits and vegetables and so forth. So just an interesting dream from a patient who was doing well on Bambusa. So I'd like to just say a little bit about Poaceae and civilizational transformation, right? So as I said in the beginning, you know, some 6,000 years ago, it says 20,000 years, that's wrong. It was about 6,000 or 7,000 years ago that the first evidence of sedentary civilization began to be, you know, that has been uncovered in the Near East in what was called Mesopotamia, what's now Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq. This is where humans first began to settle and live in permanent dwellings. The first peoples who started settling down were called the Natufians, living in this area. And when you settle down, you know, there's these new opportunities for holding on to things. If you're nomadic and you're moving around all the time, it doesn't really make sense to have stuff because you can't move it when you go, right? So material things take on a new importance and attitudes towards work shift. I'm going to quote here from this wonderful book, which I'd like to recommend to anybody who's interested in pursuing this further. This is called The Patterning Instinct by Jeremy Lent. The subtitle is A Cultural History of Humanity's Search for Meaning. Really wonderful look at really the history of our collective consciousness through the stages of civilization that humanity has gone through. So Lent says, attitudes towards work shift. Rather than doing just what you need to feed yourself that day, there's an incentive to work harder, to invest in the future. And this all leads to a changed view of nature. with people relying on their own planning and storage rather than an ever-providing natural world. So it permits the accumulation, agriculture permits the accumulation of wealth, and with that comes social and economic stratification, right? You're worth more than I am because you have all this land to grow all this stuff and I don't, right? Or I have to work on your land as a serf, right? So we have power differential, hierarchy, social and economic stratification. And the sociologist Alan Testart pointed out that with this transition from hunter-gatherer and foraging to agriculture, we're really beginning to express a distrust of nature, right? Because with hunting and gathering, there's always this trust that when you're in harmony with nature, you belong to the world, that it will provide for you. But when you're doing the hard work of farming, you're relying on your own efforts, your own work, and you're anticipating the future and future need. So there becomes a lot more ego involvement in your own efforts, right? So that's another aspect of this civilizational transformation and its effect on our consciousness. So once again, this is from the Patterning Instinct by Jeremy Lent. And he points out that humans got domesticated as much as the plants and animals. So I want to read from this book again, this amazing little myth, so I can quickly find it, from the story of Gilgamesh, again from I think it was Iraq or ancient Iraq. So yes, in the I'm going to read for just a little bit, bear with me. In the Enkidu and the Temptress, in the Mesopotamian epic of Gilgamesh, one of the most ancient myths to have survived to modern times, a character named Enkidu becomes a close friend of the hero Gilgamesh. Enkidu was created by the gods as a wild man with matted hair covering his body, oblivious of mankind and knowing nothing about civilization. He eats grass in the hills with the gazelles and drinks with the herds of wild game at the watering holes. One day, the civilized folk, terrified of Enkidu, decide to corrupt him with, quote, a harlot from the temple of love, unquote. Enkidu makes love with her for 6 days and seven nights, forgetting his home in the hills. When he's done, he goes back to the wild beasts, but now everything is different. When the gazelles and other wild creatures see him, they bolt. He tries to run after them, but his body feels bound as though with a cord, and his knees give way. His swiftness has gone. Enkidu has grown weak, we are told, for, quote, wisdom was in him and the thoughts of a man were in his heart, unquote. He goes back to the harlot, who persuades him to accompany her to the city, saying, quote, you are wise, Enkidu, and now you have become like a god. Why do you want to run wild with the beasts in the hills? Come with me. I will take you to strong-willed Uruk. Enkidu follows her to Uruk, where he puts clothes on for the first time and learns how to eat bread and drink wine. There he engages in hand-to-hand combat with Gilgamesh until he's finally thrown, after which they embrace and become inseparable friends. Enkidu doesn't look back on his old free life until he's lying on his deathbed, when a pang of regret takes hold and he curses all those who corrupted him. Quote, I was once in the wilderness, he laments, with all the treasure I wished. It really captures so beautifully this transition, right, from nomadic hunter-gatherer foraging to the life of settled humanity. And I wanted to say a little bit about the role of the grains, again, in taming us, in unwilding us, right? So wild wheat and barley, these grains, these poaceae, they have weak husks that spontaneously shatter, dropping their seeds to the ground where they germinate and grow into the next generation. Now, occasionally a mutation causes the husks to grow stronger and prevent them from shattering. And while this mutation would be lethal for a wild plant, it's very convenient for human gatherers, right? Because the seeds remain in the plant and are more available to be harvested. They don't just drop out when you pick them, right? So as people relied increasingly on these non-shattering varieties, they had then to take over the job of planting them each year because the plants had become unable to propagate themselves. Then they had to weed the field they had planted to keep out the stronger wild varieties, right? So humans, in a way, not only tamed the Poaceae, but the Poaceae have tamed our consciousness. Hmm. And to conclude, I just want to read this, see if I can find it, this the words to this Mesopotamian fertility ceremony dating back at least 6,000 years. Okay, this once again is in Jeremy Lent's book, right? It's a dramatic expression of the fusion of agriculture, social status, sexuality, and abundance. Okay, so this is a little bit raunchy, but everyone here is over 18.
Okay. Find it.
Here we are. So this is the ritual, and it involves Inanna, the goddess of sexual love and fertility, has to decide between marrying a farmer or a shepherd. Dumuzi, one of her regal suitors, woos her by convincing her of his background and rank. She finally gives herself to him with the following incantation. So this is the incantation. Inanna says, "As for me, my vulva, me, the maid, who will plow it for me? My vulva, the watered ground, for me, the queen, who will station the ox there?" And Dumuzi says, "Oh, lordly lady, the king will plow it for you. Dumuzi, the king will plow it for you." Inanna says, "Plow my vulva, man of my heart." And the chorus says, "Plants rose high by his side. Grains rose high by his side."
Wow. Such a beautiful, beautiful languaging around, you know, we have this idea of being fertile as an individual having babies. We are fertile as a community, a fertile field, providing what's needed, the abundance of all of that. And you can really see how that could get all tangled up, all intermixed in early cultures. Yes. You know, that it's just a microcosm, macrocosm thing around what it is to be fertile. How cool is that?
Yeah. And then the question that's remaining to be answered is, well, where do we go from here in our evolution, right? Since we have been tamed by the Poaceae and all of this fusion of rank, social rank, economic inequality, fused in this bizarre way with sexuality and status, you know, where do we go from here? And I, of course, don't know the answer, but I wanted to share this little clip, a little trailer for a very interesting movie called In the Beginning There Was Light. Have any of you seen this movie? It's about breatharians. It's about people who don't eat or drink. Mm-hmm. I just thought it would be just interesting to contrast this. So let me just show the little trailer. Let's see here.
Nicht, dass die Leute aufhören zu essen und zu trinken, das ist nicht entscheidend, das ist nicht der Grund.
Begriffe wie Lichtnahrung verstehe ich überhaupt nicht, weil wir keine Pflanzen sind, sondern eben Menschen.
Also 60 Jahre ohne Wasser und ohne Essen und ohne Energie, das glaube ich schlicht und einfach nicht. Das ist denkunmöglich.
Wenn du eine Kartoffel isst, hast du eine Verstoffwechselung des Lichts vor diesen Kartoffeln. Und das Grobe scheißt du wieder aus.
Bitte, wo nimmt er seine Energie her fürs Herz, für die Leber, für die Atmung?
Wir hören uns direkt das Licht. Ich brauche einfach keinen Stuhl mehr.
Also ich habe diesen Lichtnahrungsprozess gemacht im Januar 2001. Und seitdem habe ich nichts mehr gegessen.
Es gibt eine richtige Tradition diesbezüglich von Menschen, die ohne Nahrung leben.
Dann dürfte keiner mehr verhungern.
You may require 40 years of meditation experience before you can get to the point where you can do this. Well, if you're starving to death, you don't have a chance to spend 40 years meditating. It's too late.
The mind is capable of producing effects. And that's mind-blowing.
Möglicherweise gibt es da etwas.
Okay.
You ever wondered what actors and actresses do when they have to get in shape really fast for a movie? Because I can promise you, it's not the same diet that you're following and the same training plan that you try.
All right. Someone, you got an ad in there too.
Right. And jump to the next thing. Next. You know, in Yogananda's book, The Autobiography of a Yogi, he talks about going to visit this woman in India who hasn't eaten for like 20 years and talking with her. I can't help but be curious about the timing of a movie like this as we are at this point that you've been talking about.
Yeah, there's no accidents there, right?
Yeah, wow. Because I certainly have not heard anything about any of that. But if the guy went through training in 2001, evidently it's a thing.
Yeah, I highly recommend the full movie. It's really quite provocative. Very, very interesting. Very interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
So do you guys have some questions for Doug? Anything about the poesia? Anything about the concepts that he's presented here? You know, Michael Pollan?
Yes.
He talks about, you know, how potatoes have used humans to propagate themselves.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just the poesia, right?
Yeah. And I right. think we have this tendency to say that as a human, you know, at the top of the food chain here, we employ other things to be busy with us and to do the things that we want them to do. But I think this idea that we are also being tamed by the grasses that create specific effects in us is a really nice context and probably a more accurate story than just the one-sided, oh yeah, I grow it, I eat it, we're good.
Yes, thanks, Karen. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We are in so many ways the products of everything around us. And that's what makes homeopathy possible, right? The fact that we can see ourselves in the plants and the animals and the minerals yeah. around us because we are made up of them. And so understanding ourselves, to understand ourselves, we have to understand the planet.
Right? Yeah. Is there a proving of Oryza sativa? Do you know?
I don't believe there is a good proving of it. I don't believe there is a good proving of it. Could be wrong there. I don't know. I think it's mostly clinically, not known yeah. clinically.
Yeah. Clinical. Well, and you know, there are a lot of these areas where we've got one or two members within a group of mm-hmm. somethingness. And then we start working out based on our understanding.
Right.
So, right. Very cool. All right. Do you guys have questions or comments for Doug? So, Doug, are you thinking that in the next session, we'll continue with additional conversation about the poesia and the topics that you've presented today? Or are you going to bring us something new?
Probably something new. I think I've exhausted Poesia. I think something new. Haven't decided yet.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate all that you bring to this. Such a thought-provoking case. Send me your document and I'll get it posted and I'll put in a link Also, if I can, to that trailer, and also to Jeremy Lent's book.
Okay, I will.
Okay, I will. Great.
And thank All you, right. Tricia and Marjorie, for participating. And see you next time.
All right. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.